What's going on out there, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to the latest edition of the Raw Deal Podcast right here at www.gerweck.net, Gerweck.net, your source on the World Wide Web for the latest in pro wrestling news since 1997. You can also listen to this podcast on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and iTunes. I am the host, Frank D, but I'm not alone. Once again, my tag team partner, Mr. Adley Garee. What's going on, big man?
That's right, Frank D. I am here with the plan, and I cannot wait to take that deep dive into pro wrestling news.
Absolutely. And before we do all that, Atlee, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media?
Y'all can hit me up on Twitter at Atlee Green, and please check out my blog at thegreenscreen.net.
Also, check out youtube.com/Gerweck Report Podcast today. That's the official YouTube channel of Gerweck.net. Tons of interview content up there right now for your listening pleasure. We have interviews with Teddy Long, Eric Bischoff, Rob Van Dam, Matt Hardy, Vince Russo. The list goes on and on. So check it out today, youtube.com/Gerweck Report Podcast. Like and subscribe to our channel. We definitely appreciate your support. Also, check out ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerweck today. That's the official merchandise store of Gerweck.net. We have 8 t-shirt designs up there right now. The Raw Deal Podcast t-shirt. We have the Gerweck.net t-shirt and a Gerweck Report Podcast t-shirt. $19.99 plus shipping and handling. Some of the bigger sizes cost a little bit more, but nonetheless, check it out today. ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerweck. Now, Atlee and myself a few weeks ago put out this little gimmick that we were going to try. And that's basically bringing some listeners onto our show. Last week, we tried it with Dakota. It was a success. This week, we got our man, Jonathan. What's going on, big man?
Hey, Frank. Hey, Atlee. It's great to be here. Been a fan of Gerweck.net since 2005 and also contributing on the site. Great to be here.
Great to have you here on the Raw Deal Podcast. And before we start the bulk of our show, I want to send a special message here to Jason Solomon from the Solomon Monster Sounds Off Podcast. Heard about you having blood cancer, and I gotta say that's, you know, terrible, terrible news. Cancer is a real son of a bitch, and I hope that you get better. I hope that you beat this fight. You know, the thing with Saw Monster is that when me and Steve first started doing podcasts with the Gerweck Report Podcast back in 2014, in the early stages of that, I actually reached out to Saw Monster because, in my opinion, I felt, you know, and there's a lot of different podcasts out there, but I felt that Saw Monster was the best podcast, and he's a damn good guy, and he helped me out and gave me some different things to look at here as far as, you know, how to do this and how to do that. So I definitely appreciate what he did for me and what he did for Steve Gerweck and us launching the Gerweck Report Podcast. So Saw Monster, get well soon, partner. Let's talk about Daniel Bryan's retirement this past week. You know, Daniel Bryan is a guy, didn't really have that long of a run in WWE. He's a multiple time World Heavyweight Champion, United States Champion. He's pretty much done it all in this business. And it sucks that he's coming to an end the way it is for Daniel Bryan. And Atlee, why don't you run us through his speech?
Well, it was crazy because Monday seemed like it was going to be just another day of professional wrestling with a new episode of Monday Night Raw on the horizon. Then all of a sudden, in the afternoon, we get a particular tweet that changed all of that. It was 20 words, 137 characters, and it was Daniel Bryan informing the world of professional wrestling that effective immediately he was retiring from wrestling. And, of course, the Daniel Bryan saga has been well documented over the past couple of years, and he was anointed the hero of the masses, even though WWE was very reluctant to recognize that due to their way of thinking, you know, that it had to be a big towering colossus with GQ looks in order to, you know, be successful, and we know that's clearly not the case. And, of course, with resounding chants of yes, 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 arenas all over the world, WWE couldn't ignore it anymore. But sadly, a neck injury in 2014, followed by a concussion in 2015, closed the door on what many would call, and I would call, a remarkable career. And when Daniel Bryan gave his speech on Monday, he talked about how, you know, he got another test to check out his brain, and it turns out his brain's not so good. And when he said that, you kind of felt, okay, this is the real deal. There's no acting involved. This is not a work. And he's really going to have to retire. And at 32 years old, he announced he was done. He's going to make babies with his lovely wife, Bree. He did the retirement speech in his home state of Washington with his mom there, his family and friends there. And he made a good decision because a lot of wrestlers would still say, no, I still can wrestle. I can still go out there and perform every night. Forget this. But he realized that there's more life than professional wrestling, even though wrestling was his life for a very long time. And now he's going to look forward to avenues outside of professional wrestling, where I think he'll be successful as well. And I also want to say that Daniel Bryan's accomplishments in the industry, the enormity of them, are not going to be fully realized for quite some time. Because there are a lot of guys that have come to WWE over the years with outside name recognition, but especially for the independents, but WWE was always hesitant to push them. But I think Daniel Bryan was able to break through the glass ceiling because his hard work, the mastery of his craft, and his refreshingly honest persona just made the audience really get behind him. And it got to the point where the audience was not going to be denied this time. They weren't going to let WWE forget, hey, no matter how many times you beat him, we still like Daniel Bryan. And Daniel Bryan wasn't going to be denied either, and he just kept working hard to the point where he main evented WrestleMania 30, you know, for the ultimate happy ending where he won the World Heavyweight Championship. And the thing is, that was never the plan. The plan was Batista versus Randy Orton at the main event at WrestleMania, with Batista coming out on top, but they had to flip the script. Daniel Bryan won, and even though his title reign didn't last that long due to a broken neck, it's a moment you can never take away from Daniel Bryan because he truly earned it. And I think AJ Styles' current success in WWE can be attributed on a subliminal level to Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan was the one that made WWE realize, you know, again, reluctantly, that, hey, guys that have a name and have some street credit on the independent scene can come in here and really do some good things. And now you have AJ Styles coming in with the same name, same character, and they're recognizing his outside accomplishments. Like, they've called him a former IWGP champion. They've called him a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and they're booking him as such. So I think a large part of that is due to Daniel Bryan's success, but I don't think that will be something that's recognized for a long time.
Man, you know, the first time I heard about Daniel Bryan, I was just starting to get into wrestling around 2005. He was really making a name for himself in Ring of Honor. And then, like, 5 years later, they, you know, after becoming Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, he became NXT rookie Daniel Bryan. And, you know, I really thought, like, this guy was such a big deal in Ring of Honor, he was going to get, like, an immediate push, but they kind of treated him like a joke at first. And then the fans, like, got behind him. You know, I mean, I think he was, like, fired for choking, like, one of the announcers or something like that. And then they brought him back for SummerSlam, and, you know, he won the United States Championship from Miz later that year. And, yeah, but what you guys said, he won the World Championship, you know. And, honestly, it's really sad that he had to retire. But at the same time, you know, even before he was going to make his speech on Monday, I had this feeling like, you know, maybe the doctors were keeping a secret from the audience, you know. And, you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, how Chris Benoit's brain was messed up, you know, during the murder-suicide. And I was starting to think, if Daniel Bryan continued to wrestle, I mean, when I found out during his speech that he's had 10 concussions in his 16-year career, I thought that was insane. So I'm really glad that he's going to live a healthier life and start a family and maybe find some other venues outside of wrestling, because the last thing anybody wants is him having a messed up brain, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Daniel Bryan is a guy who really did the unthinkable that people said wasn't going to happen. And it took him so long to actually get to WWE. I mean, Daniel Bryan actually had a tryout with WWE, I believe, in 2001, somewhere around there.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Frank D. I was actually there for that. It happened in Boston, Massachusetts. It was a couple of days after WrestleMania 17. And okay, he was actually as the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. And he actually put over Jerry Lynn in a dark match before Raw.
Right, right, yeah. And I saw a match on the network with him. It was another dark match with Daniel Bryan as the American Dragon with a mask on, teaming with some guy named the Shooter against Spanky and Lance Cade. And it's a pretty good match. And that's actually on the collections section of the network right now. So you can go check that out. But Daniel Bryan is a guy who did the unthinkable. I mean, he was successful in a company that I don't think designed it to be that way. I don't think they designed Daniel Bryan to get over as much as he did. So I'm glad that he was able to do that. I'm not going to come on here and say that I was the biggest Daniel Bryan fan, because I really wasn't. But I cannot deny the accomplishments that he did in that company. And him being a smaller guy, I mean, we've seen small guys before come in that company and just get destroyed. But, you know, he outlived it. And when you talk about someone who, you know, had a career outside of WWE and still made a name. You got to talk about a guy who paved that way for that. I think we can actually mention here CM Punk. But nonetheless, you know, Daniel Bryan, you know, we here wish you the best in your future endeavors, whatever you have planned for yourself, whether it be as a trainer, whether it be as an announcer, whether it be, you know, doing something outside of wrestling, whatever it is. We wish you the best. You know, you're a good guy, and that's pretty much all I got to say about Daniel Bryan. But something else occurred here, guys, on Monday night when that segment was over with Daniel Bryan. Someone grabbed Vince McMahon's arm, and Vince McMahon pushed him back as they were cutting to the black. And we didn't really know what to think of that. It was just a very, very awkward situation. And it comes out later on the next day that the person who grabbed Mr. McMahon's arm was indeed Titus O'Neil. Now, Titus O'Neil was told Tuesday night at the SmackDown tapings that he was being suspended for 90 days for unprofessional conduct for grabbing Vince McMahon's arm. Now, Adley, I'm going to start with you first and then move on to Jonathan here. What's your take on this situation? Because there's a lot of people out there that are saying this is a race thing. You know, if it hadn't been John Cena or The Rock or Steve Austin, it wouldn't have been a problem. But it's, you know, it is Titus O'Neil, and he happens to be black, and it's Black History Month. What's your take on this, man?
Well, man, it was an odd turn of events as WWE suspended Titus O'Neil, what's officially being called unprofessional conduct, due to the incident that took place during the final seconds of the WWE Network stream of Daniel Bryan's celebration. And you can see as they're fading to black, Titus O'Neil is playfully grabbing Vince McMahon by the right arm, and he was shoved by McMahon in retaliation. And of course, as you mentioned, Frank D., O'Neil was notified on Tuesday at the SmackDown tapings that he is being sent home, he's being suspended for 90 days, and he was also being fined an undisclosed amount of money. But then on Wednesday, his suspension was reduced from 90 days to 60 days, but that still means he's going to miss WrestleMania, which is the biggest payday of the year, especially for a mid-card wrestler in Titus O'Neil's situation. And the optics look bad here because you're dealing with an African-American wrestler who was suspended during Black History Month for what appears to be a petty issue. And when you have also the situation where Titus O'Neil has brought WWE a lot of publicity due to his charitable work outside the organization and the fact he was recently named Celebrity Dad of the Year by EverythingDads.com, it looks bad. Now, I don't think this was a race issue at all, but it looks that way if you just look at everything on the surface and don't look at the specific details of the situation. Now, on Friday, ProWrestlingSheet.com exclusively broke some new information on the matter. It turned out that Titus O'Neil told management that he was only trying to allow Stephanie McMahon to exit the stage first and said ladies first when he grabbed Vince's arm, but understands how Vince could have taken it as something more. Now, Frank, Jonathan, I cannot think of a single job I've ever had where I would have been reprimanded, written up, or maybe even fired if I had grabbed my boss by the arm in front of all of our colleagues and said, ladies first. I mean, while the punishment may not fit the crime, Titus O'Neil completely misread the play here, and an example had to be made, and it was him. Now, frankly, my biggest concern going forward is for the future trajectory of Titus O'Neil's career, because he was in the early stages of somewhat of a singles push, but now that's gone. That's completely out the window. And hopefully, WWE will not follow the historical pattern of humbling the suspended party upon their return, and instead, they take a clean slate approach, thus showing the professionalism that they believe O'Neil failed to display.
Yeah, you know, I think in some ways, Titus was in the wrong. Because when you go to work, go to work. There's a time to play and there's a time to work, you know, similar to what Teddy Long said on your podcast. If you were doing something inappropriate at work at the wrong time, yeah, there would be consequences, I would think. At the same time, though, 90 days, maybe even 60 days is a little harsh considering the wellness policy. Strike one's 30 days, strike two, 60 days, strike three, you're fired. So it really begs the question, is that really fair to Titus? And as far as, is this a race issue? You know, I mean, I can understand where that can come from. It's Black History Month. Vince McMahon's the boss. He's the white boss. Titus O'Neil's the African-American worker. So I can see how that can come into play and that can be interpreted as racist. And also, He lost his match to Adam Rose early in the night, so maybe there was more going on because he was getting like a major push for like 5 weeks, and he all of a sudden he loses. So we really don't know what's going on. It's all guesswork. But at the same time, I think Titus O'Neil was wrong to correct his boss. You should not do something unprofessional like that, like being playful, saying ladies first in front of a live crowd especially. But at the same time, a suspension for that length of time period, I'm a bit on the fence on that. I don't think I agree with the amount of time Titus has been suspended.
My take on the situation is simply this. Titus O'Neil, the whole story here looks very fishy to me. I think there's more to it than what's being told right now. I think that this could have possibly been, and this is just speculation by me. I'm not saying that this is actual factual. It's just speculation. There could have possibly been maybe a wellness policy violation here. And the reason why I say that is because the fact that earlier in the night, the guy did lose. He was on a 5-week win streak, as you just said, Jonathan. And all of a sudden, he gets jobbed out to Adam Rose, of all people. So I think there might be something more going on here. But it does look bad for the company that it is Black History Month. Titus O'Neil is a black wrestler, and he got suspended for pretty much touching the white boss. It looks bad, but I don't think that it's a race issue here at all, because the hottest act in the WWE is the New Day. So I don't really think that it's a race thing at all. I think it's Vince McMahon is petty and doesn't like being corrected in front of the employees. I mean, he's a big boss. He's a control freak, as I've heard. So he wants to control everything. And in that situation, he couldn't control that. You know, the entire angle was Daniel Bryan goes to the back, Vince McMahon's heading to the back, not Vince McMahon being pulled as they're, you know, fading to black. And that's pretty much what it's about. And he also wanted to send a message to the rest of the talents not to ever do that. Don't ever put your hands on a boss. I mean, I have seen recently in WWE television where Vince McMahon is backstage talking to talent, but yet he's got security right by him. So I don't know if things have changed over the years, because, you know, you saw Beyond the Mat, you know, years ago, how everything was more loose and Vince was up there playing and joking with the talent. So that's what kind of caught a lot of people off guard here, is the excessiveness of what Vince McMahon did here. And I heard, Atlee, that Vince McMahon wanted to fire Titus O'Neil on the spot. He was so pissed off, but Titus O'Neil had backers like Joey Mercury and Triple H that convinced him not to do it. And Triple H actually might have talked him out of that 90-day suspension and brought it down to 60.
I'm not surprised at all. I've actually heard the very same thing. And I think it all goes back to the whole control freak thing that people have labeled Vince McMahon as being, you know, for the last 30 years or so. Paul Heyman said it best in the 2010 interview, where he said, if Vince McMahon ever sneezes during a conversation, just look at your iPhone or your BlackBerry for the next 20 minutes, because nothing you say will get through to him. And the reason is because he's going to be pissed off at the fact that he sneezed. And the reason being is he couldn't control the sneeze. That's how much of a control freak he's been labeled as over the years. And again, I don't think it's a race thing at all, because I guarantee you, if anybody would have done that to him, they'd be feeling Vince McMahon's wrath right now. I'm willing to bet if somebody like even like Randy Orton grabbed that dude's arm and said, ladies first, they'd be in some hot water, let me tell you.
Absolutely. So I guess the question I have next, guys, is simply this, and we'll transition from Titus O'Neil. Where do you go with Titus O'Neil at this point? When Titus O'Neil comes back, I mean, is he going to get the Berrio treatment? Is he going to go back to the superstars, main event treatment? Or is WWE going to put this guy back on track? You know, there's obviously something there with Titus. Titus O'Neil, in my opinion, is not the best wrestler, but he's a very charismatic guy. So where do you go here? I mean, do you take this situation that's a complete negative and turn it into a positive upon his return to WWE? I mean, where do we go here with Titus O'Neil?
I hope that they really just take a clean slate approach, look at this situation and say, hey, it's water under the bridge. Let's pick up where we left off and not just have him job out to every single wrestler on the roster, which is what they usually do. Because if they do that, people are going to be watching it. People are going to be pointing out to him saying, hey, you know, you suspended him. You fined him. You took him off TV. He missed WrestleMania. That's four big punishments. You know, he's paid his debt, if you will. Now it's time to just clean the slate and let him do his thing. But you know what's going to be interesting, guys? On Monday Night Raw coming up, it's going to be interesting if the Authority opens the show with their long-winded, boring 20-minute promo. And then during the promo, you hear the audience go, Titus O'Neil. Titus O'Neil, Titus O'Neil. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that would be very interesting to see if that does come into play. And how do you think the company would respond to something like that?
My thing is this, Adley, is that all of a sudden now I'm just going to keep it real here because, you know, we keep it 1,000 here on the Raw Deal Podcast. All these people that are all of a sudden now on the Titus O'Neil bandwagon, right? Where were you at when Titus O'Neil was doing the primetime players gimmick? Where was the fan support when Titus was having his singles push? So all of a sudden now something happens and everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon. That's the kind of thing, the shit that I don't like, is that all of a sudden now everybody's a fan, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, if they do chant Titus's name, I think it would really depend on the city. If it's like like if it's like a Chicago or a Philadelphia or a Boston, you know, or New York, maybe they would like kind of like be like the smart mark crowd.
Good thoughts there, Jonathan. And that's going to conclude our thoughts on the Titus O'Neil situation. Once again, if you want to hear Teddy Long's thoughts on the Titus O'Neil situation, head over right now to Gerwick.net in the audio section, the complete interview with Theodore Arlong, Teddy Long himself, as he delves into the Titus O'Neil controversy and many other things right now. Check it out at Gerwick.net. You know, Adley, the other day, the WWE did a conference call with their financial report, and Vince McMahon said something that was really shocking to me, in a sense that nothing is ever, ever going to change in that company, and things are going to stay the same. Vince McMahon said, Adley, that TV ratings no longer matter in WWE. They are not built and centered around television ratings anymore. He said the ratings are down, but the more we complain, the more money WWE seems to be making. What are your thoughts on Vince McMahon saying that TV ratings don't matter anymore in WWE?
Well, TV ratings might not matter to Vince McMahon and WWE anymore, but they sure as hell matter to their parent company, NBC Universal, which is paying them over $142 million a year to stay on the USA Network with both Raw and SmackDown. And also, ad revenue comes into this for a big deal because on AMC, the most popular show on cable television is The Walking Dead, and they average over 11 million viewers a week. And because they average over 11 million viewers a week, The Walking Dead can charge $326,000 per 30-second commercial. Now, the reason they can charge that amount of money for a 30-second ad is because companies know, wow, our ad's going to be seen in front of 11 million people. When you go to WWE Monday Night Raw, they average about over 3 million viewers, so they can charge about, let's say, $70,000 per 30-second ad. But when the ratings start going down, as they have been, you know, to the 2.5 million range, companies start complaining and saying, hey, why the hell are you charging us $70,000? Because we're paying 70 grand because of the fact that you said 3.5 million people, you know, watch the show. Now 2.5 million people watch your show. So why am I paying $70,000 still? So ratings still matter in the overall scheme of things. And just to kind of show you the value between WWE and some of the other shows on the USA Network, iRobot is tearing it up with critics. Their ratings went up every single week, and they actually won 2 Golden Globes. And their upcoming second season is one of the most anticipated shows of the fall season or the spring season coming up. And they only average 1.39 million viewers. So Raw gets a lot more ratings as a result, you know, because more people watch it. It's live TV. It's DVR proof because it's a live sports environment. And I think Vince McMahon is going to find himself in some hot water if he keeps on with this philosophy that, hey, ratings don't matter, because yes, people are cutting the cord, people are getting rid of cable, and people are going to more streaming services like Amazon Prime, like Hulu, like Netflix, and so on and so forth. And you got individual networks now that are kind of, they really don't care about the fact that they're on cable TV anymore, that they're going, like ESPN has their own streaming service now, CBS has their own streaming service, NBC's going to get in the game, HBO has their own streaming service, and that's going to kind of make Comcast less valuable than other cable companies in the overall stream of things. And I think WWE is looking ahead and saying that, you know, by the time this cord cutter thing is the norm and not the exception, they'll be in the lead. But Vince needs to be very careful to not bite the hand that feeds him in any situation.
Yeah, and you know, in fact that Comcast is owned by Universal and WWE works with Universal, you know, I can only imagine NBC like thinking about what Vince said and like going, you know, like, can you believe this guy? You know, Frank, you know, a lot of what Atlee said is true. You know, we have so many streaming services now But, you know, at the same time, we have a lot of, like, different types of shows that, you know, like, particularly sports shows that get a lot of live feedback from the viewers at home. And so it is kind of DVR-proof in that regard. And, you know, I can only imagine, you know, how long TV can honestly last. You know, in 5 years, we might be seeing Raw live on the WWE Network. Who knows? You know, I mean, I remember, like, I mean, I only started watching wrestling like around this time, but yeah, they were on Spike TV because like, a deal with USA fell out. You know, I mean, the last thing they want to do is have a bad relationship with Universal. I mean, they just got SmackDown on USA, and you know, and they're still doing, they're getting paid a lot of money because it's a 3-hour show now. I mean, I don't think they were making quite as much money when it was 2 hours. So you know, the fact that Vince would go publicly and say that, you know, really begs a question: was that really the best idealistic choice of words, you know, when, you know, you're working for a major corporation that's helping you get, you know, revenue? I mean, I know Vince wants to heavily promote the network, but seriously, sometimes I really wonder what goes on inside his head when he says things like that.
Well, you know, Jonathan, you say you wonder what goes through Vince's head, and I can only imagine what goes through his head. I mean, here's a guy that thought Katie Vick was a good idea, or Isaac Yankem DDS was a good idea, or Bastion Booger, or Mantar, you know, or Bob Sparkplug Holly, or, you know, Adam Bomb, shit like that. That's what goes through his brain. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I just know that that's not really good when you say things like that, and really they have no emphasis on the ratings anymore. So that pretty much tells me you don't give a damn whether Raw and SmackDown are good shows or not. If the ratings don't mean anything, you don't care. Only thing they care about is network subscriptions. But, Adley, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to subscribe to the network, say for a pay-per-view, I would like to be entertained with Raw and SmackDown before I subscribe.
Oh, I completely agree, because in many ways, SmackDown and Monday Night Raw are pretty much just 3-hour and 2-hour infomercials to convince you to buy the WWE Network so you can see the pay-per-view or now the special event. So I think it serves Vince McMahon very well right now to keep TV ratings as high as possible. Otherwise, he's going to find that those subscriptions are going to be a little hard to come by as far as the numbers go.
And that's our thoughts on WWE and TV ratings. And we're going to take a short break here on the Raw Deal Podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about AJ Styles versus Chris Jericho and why some people feel that Chris Jericho buried the young talent. We're also going to talk about Rey Mysterio possibly returning to WWE and why wins and losses don't matter according to the Road Dogg. That and much, much more here on the Raw Deal Podcast on Gerwick.net. Hey, what's going on? This is Frank D of the Raw Deal Podcast. And if you like what you're listening to so far and you want to make a financial contribution to the show, you can head over right now to ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick and order the official Raw Deal Podcast t-shirt for just $19.99 plus shipping and handling. They ship domestically, they ship internationally. You can have PayPal, debit, credit, they got you covered. Check it out today, ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick. We appreciate your support. And we are back here on the Raw Deal Podcast. Frank D, Adley Green, and Jonathan. Now, Adley, AJ Styles wrestled Chris Jericho this past week on SmackDown. Chris Jericho beat AJ Styles, and the internet blew their shit. Apparently now, Chris Jericho, the veteran, has buried this young talent in AJ Styles. Adley, what is your take on this situation?
Well, Chris Jericho responded to these criticisms on Twitter by saying, "Ha ha, so if I win, I'm burying young talent. And if I lose, I'm a jobber. Get a life." And I completely agree with Chris Jericho, because I'm telling you right now, if anybody in their right mind truly believes that Chris Jericho buried AJ Styles in any way, shape, or form, you are a moron, you're an idiot, and you should not be allowed to watch professional wrestling ever again, much less be allowed to use the term buried. Because guess what? Chris Jericho going over our AJ Styles, it's called storytelling. It's called returning the favor. It's called getting your heat back. It's not a burial in any way, shape, or form. And I'm going to stop now before I start cussing people out.
One thing I'm not a fan of in this modern era of wrestling is what people are calling online the 50-50 booking. Now, Chris Jericho beating AJ on SmackDown, that's fine, you know, one for one. and they do a rubber match. Preferably, I would like to see AJ go over in that rubber match, whether it be on Raw, SmackDown, or Fastlane. And if that happens, you know, I don't mind if that's the end of feud, but at the same time, you know, I don't know what Dean's doing after Fastlane. I don't think he's going to win, but I would love to see their feud continue over to transition for the IC title for WrestleMania, because I don't want to see them in the Andre the Giant Battle Royale. I mean, they need something huge for WrestleMania. You know, like last year, we had the seven-man IC title championship match with Daniel Bryan winning. So, you know, if AJ Styles wins that match, if they do that match again, that would really, I mean, AJ is like, is really popular now. His merchandise is selling, so that would be a really great way to get him over.
Oh, definitely. And this has to be the rubber match at Fastlane. This is going to, you know, culminate in if AJ Styles is going to be a big franchise player moving forward, or if Chris Jericho beats him again, then we'll see, okay, maybe AJ Styles goes down on the ladder. But we got to talk about what goes on after Fastlane. As I just mentioned, if Jericho beats Styles, and I don't really see Styles having a prominent role, you know, moving forward. I mean, maybe he'll start getting that Dolph Ziggler treatment. But if he does beat Jericho and they have bigger plans for AJ Styles, where do you guys see AJ Styles fitting into WrestleMania, the biggest event of the year? We're going to start with you, Abby, and then you, Jonathan.
Well, the way I look at it, if Chris Jericho ends up beating AJ Styles and, quote, winning this feud, it's still not a burial in any way, shape, or form. But if AJ Styles ends up going over in this feud, you have to put him in a prominent role at WrestleMania, and you have to actually put him in a featured match. And I would like to see him wrestle The Undertaker. And the reason I say that is because the word has come out now that Taker is no longer going to wrestle Braun Strowman due to the internet backlash that occurred over the possibility of this match taking place. So now the reports are coming out through the Wrestling Observer and other news sites, including Gorick.net, that it turns out Taker is scheduled to wrestle somebody, and it's going to be a name that none of us expect. And I think a lot of people would not expect Undertaker to wrestle AJ Styles at WrestleMania, but I think if you do put them in a particular match with each other, the feud writes itself, because you got AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, taking on the Phenom, the Undertaker. I mean, Phenom versus the phenomenal one, it writes itself in my opinion.
Like I said, I really think they should do the ladder match. You know, the Intercontinental Title, they want to make it more prestigious again. AJ is a really hard worker. I don't really know if they'll make him world champion this year. I mean, maybe if people hate Roman Reigns enough, maybe they will. But yeah, I mean, if there's a consolation championship, then the IC championship for sure. Facing The Undertaker, I don't know. Like, the size difference. Like, I mean, I know there was a lot of people talking. Braun Strowman, Kevin Owens was a potential Undertaker opponent. Or no, it was Brock Lesnar. But, you know, I would love, you know, I mean, I think everybody really wants to see Undertaker versus Sting more than anything else. But that's not going to happen. But, yeah, I would definitely, yeah, if there's one match I would want to see AJ in, it's the IC title championship. But if it's like a one-on-one match, maybe it could be a one-on-one match with Dean Ambrose, the IC championship. Maybe Jericho and AJ could do like a number one contendership match on Raw or SmackDown. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely like to see him in a title picture, because if he wins the title like within 3 months of his debut, that'll get people even more talking, people more invested in him. And, you know, maybe, you know, Chris Jericho could get a shot at the title, try to win his 10th IC championship. But yeah, I would not have the size difference with Undertaker. I mean, the nicknames are similar, but yeah, I just can't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't see that one happening myself either. I mean, it looks good on paper, but it's just a huge size difference there. I mean, CM Punk wasn't that big of a guy, but it just, to me, wasn't that believable. But, you know, I like the story here of Chris Jericho possibly winning the IC Championship and then AJ Styles beating Jericho for the belt. But at the same time, I'm not a Dean Ambrose fan at all, but I like the concept of a possible AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose rivalry somewhere down the road as well.
Oh, no, I agree with everything you guys are saying, because if you put Jericho in an IC title situation at WrestleMania, you promote it as Jericho going for his 10th IC title. You also put AJ Styles in an IC title situation, especially being a ladder match. You know very likely that AJ Styles is going to steal the show, because we all crap on TNA to a certain extent, but back in TNA's hot period, AJ Styles was doing a lot of amazing things in those X Division matches. And to kind of bring that philosophy to a WWE ladder match would just be amazing, in my opinion. It would definitely create that signature WrestleMania moment that people talk about. But let me elaborate a little more on my Taker idea quickly. I don't want to get off topic, but Phenom versus Phenomenal One, I think it writes itself because it's very rare when you have the Undertaker actually challenging somebody at WrestleMania. The majority of the time, you're the one challenging the Undertaker. And I think it would be interesting if Undertaker, you know, during the AJ Styles promo, the lights go off, Undertaker comes out and he goes, "You have the gall to call yourself the Phenomenal One in my yard? There's only one Phenom here, and that's mean. If you want to prove yourself, let's do it at WrestleMania." But again, I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, if that did happen, I think that would be the way to go.
Maybe if The Undertaker was still a heel, I don't know if he's still a heel. But
oh, no. I mean, that's a very good point, Jonathan, that if Taker was a heel, then, yeah, that could go. That would definitely be the way to go. But if you remember his feud with Brock Lesnar this past year, they tried making The Undertaker the heel in that situation. They had him do cheap shots. They had him do low blows. They even had him cheat. They had him tap out. But no matter what they did, nobody is going to boo The Undertaker over anybody. So I think Undertaker is one of those rare guys that he could just hit you with a hatchet and he's still going to get cheered by everybody.
I agree.
Right. I totally agree with that. And speaking of people that were going to wrestle Taker, you know, you mentioned earlier there that Braun Strowman was in line to face Taker, and now that's apparently off the table. Braun Strowman is actually supposed to be put in another role at WrestleMania in terms of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which he is supposedly now, this is just speculation, you know, take with a grain of salt, but Adley, Braun Strowman is supposedly now slated to win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and there's also talk of him wrestling later in the year against Roman Reigns for the World Championship. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I remember on the report that I did on the Gerwick.net YouTube channel about the proposed Undertaker versus Braun Strowman match, I did say that I hope this is a situation where Braun Strowman is a lot better than we realize, and that WWE sees something in Braun Strowman that nobody else sees. And from what I'm hearing, that's apparently the case in some aspects. I guess Braun Strowman is a lot better of a worker than what we've seen and what we know about, because he really hasn't been put in a long singles program. He's the monster. He's the destroyer. He's the guy that where Bray Wyatt snaps his fingers, he causes all sorts of mayhem. So it looks like he's been learning on the job as well since being called to the WWE main roster, because you got to remember, this guy only had one match at an NXT house show before getting called to the main roster. So even though, you know, size matters to a great extent in WWE, they obviously saw something in him, said that he can learn on the job while being on the main roster. And if they're going to have him go over in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal as a way to push his character even more, they cannot have that Battle Royal happen on the pre-show. It has to actually happen on the main card. Because if you're going to push Braun Strowman, winning a match in a pre-show is not going to get the job done.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of this Battle Royal. I've never been a fan of it. But, Jonathan, what's your thoughts on it?
You know what? You know what, Frank? Yeah, I agree with you. I've never been a fan of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal either. It just feels like a pillar match. You know, I don't know why they throw in Andre's name. You know, I mean, they could, you know, I think, like, you know, a Dusty Rhodes, you know, Battle Royale, or Eddie Guerrero Memorial Battle Royale. You know, there's, I mean, Andre the Giant was one of the greats, but you know, there are just so many other amazing talents that passed away that, you know, it could have been, you know, change it every year. Make it like an Andre the Giant Battle Royal one year, Eddie Guerrero one, Owen Hart Memorial. Well, I know, well, Martha Hart won't allow that, but I mean, like, there, it just becomes meaning, and it feels less and less to do with Andre the Giant the more they do this match every year. You know, especially if the Big Show seems to, like, put a lot of emphasis on him. He was the second to last in the first one, then he won the last one. So Braun Strowman winning it, it's not going to do anything for his character, whether it's on the main card or the pre-show. It's just a complete filler match. You know, I mean, look what happened with the last two winners. You know, Cesaro went completely nowhere. Big Show won it for no reason. You know, I mean, I think, you know, really Sandow should have won that one. So I have no faith that this
Battle Royale is going to do Braun Strowman any justice. You know, in the Braun Strowman character, yeah, he still needs a lot of work. You know, his promos are so-so, and you know, but his black mask is kind of cool. But you know, he doesn't really have like the heel look. You know, he just comes off as a guy who's going to be part of the comedy act like Rusev, like down the line. You know, he's not going to. I don't see him ever being a world champion.
Right, right. And speaking of people who have had stellar careers in wrestling, let's talk about Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio reportedly is not happy with his financial situation with AAA and Lucha Underground. And there's talk, Adley, that Rey Mysterio could be indeed on his way back to WWE. Now, before I let you talk there, my feeling is simply this on Rey Mysterio right quick. I think that Rey Mysterio is a guy who just a few years ago didn't want to be in the company anymore. And all of a sudden now, oh, I'm open to returning. I don't like the idea at all. I think that if you have Kalisto, you got AJ Styles, you got a whole lot of different high flyers in WWE right now at NXT, what the hell do you need Rey Mysterio for?
Oh, Rey Mysterio is definitely kind of changing his tune, because I really feel that during his final days in WWE, he was led to believe by certain contacts that he would just get the floodgates open to him as far as money. What if he went back to Mexico, worked for AAA, did this thing with Lucha Underground? He was led to believe, I mean, this is just all speculation, but I think he was led to believe that he would just get Brinks truck after Brinks truck after Brinks truck, just backing up in his driveway and unloading piles of cash. But now, that doesn't seem to be the case, because Lucha Underground, and more accurately, AAA, they're behind on some payments from Rey Mysterio Jr. So now that he's seen he's not swimming in money, a la Scrooge McDuck, he wants to go back to the E. He wants to go back to the whip, as you call it, Frank D. He wants that WWE money once again. But yeah. I wonder how badly WWE would actually want Rey Mysterio Jr. back. Yes, he does sell merchandise. Yes, he is very popular. But his body has just taken a beating. You know, his shoulder, and especially his knees. His knees cannot hold up to that grind of WWE where you're working 4 or 5, sometimes 6 days a week. And plus, right now they're in a situation where they're pushing Kalisto as their new luchador. So if you bring Rey Mysterio back, do you push him as one of the top acts, or do you put him in a Chris Jericho role where he's designed really just to put people over but still keep him strong enough where he doesn't look like a jabroni? I really don't know what you do with Rey Mysterio in 2016. I think you just keep him at a mid-card level and have him put people over a la Chris Jericho.
Well, you know, Rey Mysterio is pushing, he's over 40. You know, I would love to see him, like, you know, we've never seen him as a heel in his WWE run. He might not work as a heel. Fans might cheer him no matter what, like, you know, Undertaker or something like that. But I would like to see him in, like, a Conan role, you know? Like, maybe Sin Cara turns on Kalisto over jealousy, and Rey Mysterio shows up as, like, Sin Cara's, like, you know, mentor, manager, and a la LAX, a la LWO. And they kind of like have like a Mexican posse kind of thing going on, you know, and like Sin Cara's trying to prove he's superior to Kalisto, and you know he's better than him, and they feud over the United States Championship, and you know Rey Mysterio, he does like a couple matches here. Like, I would not put Rey Mysterio in a lot of matches because of his history with his leg surgery, so I would definitely minimize his wrestling and make him kind of like a manager, not like where Ric Flair is managing Charlotte, you know, where he never wrestles because he's retired, but you know, just like he would only like do matches like on pay-per-view only, or maybe like one Raw like a month or something like that. I would definitely like to see Rey Mysterio like try it at least. I mean, they've never done a heel Rey Mysterio in the company, so at his age, as like kind of like the older Conan style role, that would certainly be interesting. I think
Rey Mysterio still has a little bit of leverage as far as actually wrestling matches, but I do believe that if he comes back to the company at this point in his career, he should definitely be putting over the younger talent, and I definitely can see him doing business for Kalisto. I think Kalisto is going to be their cash cow. He is the closest that they have to a new version of Rey Mysterio. So if Mysterio is brought back, I could definitely see him in a feud with Kalisto. And, you know, I would not be opposed to seeing Rey Mysterio work heel. I mean, they tried that in WCW when he was a part of the Filthy Animals there in 2000. So they tried that. And I think it could work. But Rey Mysterio coming in and beating Kalisto, or, you know, they're trying to build the franchise around him or something like that, absolutely not. That's not going to work. You know, wins and losses, apparently, they don't matter to the Road Dogg. What's your take on that?
The whole wins and losses thing, Frank, the all starts from a tweet that Road Dogg received from a fan during Monday Night Raw last week, where Dolph Ziggler beats Kevin Owens. And the fan was so shocked and so angry, and he was basically appalled at the idea that Dolph Ziggler beat Kevin Owens, which actually shows how far Dolph Ziggler has fallen, if you really think about it. People complain right. that he's actually going over on somebody, but I digress. So basically, Road Dogg responded to this fan by saying, wins and losses don't matter. It's all about character. Now, I do not believe for a second that Road Dogg truly believes that wins and losses don't matter. I just believe that he is toeing the company line, and he's really just putting out the company's new philosophy that wins and losses don't matter. Because even though I don't feel he believes that, I feel that the company believes that wins and losses don't matter. And as Jonathan alluded to earlier, that's why we have this 50-50 booking where the majority of the roster is kept at an even pace, and you only have one or two superstars that are actually, you know, big names like John Cena and what they're trying to do with Roman Reigns. But I think that philosophy is kind of ass backwards, because if wins and losses really don't matter, then how come you're reluctant to beat John Cena? How come you're so reluctant to beat Triple H? How come you're so reluctant to beat Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns? The list goes on and on. So I think there's some hypocrisy when it comes to saying wins and losses don't matter. But I think that philosophy is going to ultimately hurt WWE in the long run. But at the same time, since WWE is really trying to operate under this mandate, it's going to take a long time for this to be the norm of wrestling fans. Because right now, myself, you, Frank D, and you, Jonathan, as longtime wrestling fans, we're conditioned to believe that wins and losses don't matter. Wins and losses do matter. But now you have a new generation of wrestling fans that are growing up in this era where WWE is trying to put out there that wins and losses do not matter. So I feel with this new generation of fans and then the generation after, it's only a matter of time before people start to feel that, okay, wins and losses really don't matter. It's all about story. It's all about character. But at the same time, WWE keeps putting out stories like this, they may have to kind of put the brakes on that philosophy and go back to wins and losses meaning something.
One thing I do notice, like, you know, when I'm watching Raw, you know, with Dolph Ziggler beating Kevin Owens, I mean, I ask myself, wait, wasn't this, like, guy strongly, like, a top contender to face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania? You know, I mean, ironically, the one time where, you know, it's not 50-50 booking, but it's like, you know, you're burying Kevin Owens for no reason. I know there's, like, rumors, like, they're going to be a tag team. I don't think that's going to really work. Kevin Owens should be pushed as a top heel singles competitor. He did so well in NXT, turning on his best friend Sami Zayn. You know, I don't get it. I don't hate Dolph Ziggler. You know, I think he's a fine talent, but, you know, I think Kevin Owens deserves the push much more than he does, just because of how hard he works and how good he is at cutting promos. That promo, it's like leading up to Survivor Series, where he talked about history didn't happen before I came here. You know, that was amazing. You know, he cuts such great promos. So when Road Dogg says win and losses don't matter, well, when you want somebody like Kevin Owens to fight Brock Lesnar and he's losing, yes, wins and losses do matter. I don't care if it's scripted. I don't care if the matches are predetermined. Wins and losses, in that regard, at the very least, matter.
Am I the only one here that's sick and tired of seeing Kevin Owens wrestle Dolph Ziggler?
Yeah, I'm tired too.
I mean, I was watching Raw this week, and it's like, they just did this match 2 weeks ago, and we're back to it again. And I just don't understand it. I mean, Dolph Ziggler is just, he's in that place that he's never going to escape from, and that's just mid-card forever. It's pretty much where he's at. And he's never going to be able to escape from it. And Kevin Owens is being sucked down into that area with him. And I don't know why. But you know what? Wins and losses matter to me. And it matters to those people watching on TV. Because when they see that you are a jobber I mean, they barely react to anybody anyways right now, but when you are losing on a consistent basis, maybe like a Dolph Ziggler, you can tell that the audience cools off on somebody, and they definitely have cooled off on Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, absolutely, because Dolph Ziggler is just taking a beating as it comes to a booking perspective, because now the audience is at a point where they know for a fact that Dolph Ziggler is never going to be anything more than what he is now. He's never going to be a WWE World Heavyweight Champion. He's never going to be the face of the company, the top star. They know that, you know, he's going to be in this role, or he may be a little higher for a couple of weeks, but then eventually he's going to be sent right back down to the top of the mid-card where he's always been. So, I mean, he's just lost all credibility as far as the potential star power of his character. And going back to, like, wins and losses, you know, wins and losses definitely do matter, because if you think about it, last year's WrestleMania, it was booked well in advance that Bray Wyatt was going to wrestle Undertaker. And what did they do with Bray Wyatt? They kept him as strong as possible. He didn't lose a single match, and they didn't even put him in a position where he even looked weak for 1 second, because they wanted to build up his credibility so that way when they finally announced Bray Wyatt versus Undertaker, you'd actually believe that, hey, this is a worthwhile match, and hey, this is a situation where Bray Wyatt could possibly go over on the Undertaker at WrestleMania. So WWE says one thing and does the other many, many times. And when you look at a promotion, let's say like Lucha Underground, for example, you really can't call them a promotion. They're a TV show, because that's a situation with all their storylines, their cinematic cutscenes, and everything. Lucha Underground's in the situation where wins and losses really don't matter there, because on their second episode, they had this huge hype vignette about the debut of PJ Black, the former Justin Gabriel in WWE. But he ended up losing to the Mac. And most people on WWE, if that happened on WWE, everybody would be like, what the hell? You just made him a jobber because you hyped his debut and then he lost. But at Lucha Underground, it's not about the wrestling. It's more about the story. And if WWE ever gets the Lucha Underground situation where more story than sport as far as the overall spectacle goes, then yeah, maybe wins and losses don't matter. But as far as I'm concerned, WWE is nowhere close to being that. So stop doing what you're doing. Make the wins and losses count.
Yeah, I mean, what you said about Bray Wyatt right there, you know, I totally agree. You know, Bray's lost, like, to Undertaker, like, what, 2 times last year, 3 times? And, you know, I mean, they had to bring in the Dudley Boys to do the job instead, so, you know, to make the Wyatt family look strong. So, you know, really, I know it was Undertaker's 25th anniversary, but, you know, it just, it really paints a picture, you know, that I don't know how much they really see in Bray Wyatt. You know, I mean, he's obviously over with the crowd, you know, I'm surprised they haven't turned him babyface at this point. So, you know, I mean, if they're going to have Bray Wyatt job to older guys, you know, when, you know, we really need, you know, like, and like with Sting, too, you know, when he lost Triple H, you know, I mean, a lot of people felt like Sting really should have got that win, but Sting stated that that's going to be my last match, you know, despite later that year he had a couple of matches. But now it kind of makes sense, though, that, you know, Triple H is champ, because, you know, I mean, you know, he beat a big top name, and now he's kind of, now he's the world champion. So, you know, in that regard, it now makes Triple H look strong, you know, by beating a top star like Sting. But at the same time, it really doesn't do Sting any favors other than losing to a guy who only wrestles like once a year.
When you look at a guy like Bray Wyatt, who was sacrificed 2 years in a row at WrestleMania, he needs a big one. And to me personally, if they go through with Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he's going to get that big one.
Yeah, I don't believe for a second that Bray Wyatt can beat Brock Lesnar there. They have way too much money on the dude. I just can't see it.
And also, you said it best, Frank D. Bray Wyatt has not won a big one yet. And I think that is what's keeping his character from ultimately reaching that next level. And, you know, he lost to John Cena, he lost Undertaker, and he's probably going to lose to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. And that's 3 big ones in a row. So if the audience keeps seeing this situation where, okay, Bray Wyatt's, you know, featured prominently on television, but when it comes to the big money match he loses, they're going to start seeing him the same way they see Dolph Ziggler and the way they saw Kofi Kingston as, this is a guy that's only going to get to a certain level and never anything higher.
But I think fans actually see him that way right now.
It's very possible. I mean, I haven't noticed it, but again, you're probably seeing something I don't. And if they do see it that way, I think that's very unfortunate because you really just stalled out Bray Wyatt's character before he ever got a chance to mature and grow.
You know, a lot of ways, Bray Wyatt, you know, they're booking him the way, like, to an extent that, you know, John Cena and Roman Reigns should have been booked. You know, like, this goes back to wins and losses being irrelevant. You know, if I think, you know, a lot of people think, like, the answer to Cena and Reigns' problem is they should turn heel. But really, I mean, we know they're going to win. That's really it. With Bray Wyatt, we either know he's going to lose or we generally don't know if he's going to win or not. Like, if you look back at the booking of, like, Steve Austin, I mean, it's either or. I mean, you don't have to pick one or the other. But, you know, I mean, if you look at The Rock, he turned heel, and then, you know, the fans got over. And then, but, you know, Stone Cold Austin was able to get over better because he didn't always win his matches. I mean, if you look at Bret Hart versus Steve Austin, you know, I mean, people got behind him because, you know, he felt like, you know, he deserves win because he doesn't get enough of them. So, but if you get a guy like Cena and Reigns winning constantly and not getting a clean loss every once in a while, you know, always looking strong, they're not going to be relatable characters, and the crowd's going to turn on them. You know, that's why a character like Steve Austin worked, because he didn't always win.
Oh, no, Jonathan, those are very good comparisons, especially the Steve Austin, Bret Hart situation, because every single time, you know, Bret Hart was in a situation where he went over, you know, he sold, he did his thing, but then he got his big comeback and ended up winning the match. Where he wrestled Steve Austin, it was a different story. They were really trying to make Steve Austin into something bigger than he was, so Bret Hart put himself in the situation, which benefited Steve Austin greatly to the point where he barely beat Steve Austin, where he didn't just dominate Steve Austin. It was a back-and-forth match that just sort of looked like Steve Austin was going to win. Bret Hart came out of nowhere and won those matches. He did the same thing at Survivor Series 96, and they did the same thing at WrestleMania 13, where it took Steve Austin was going to strangle him with the ring cord, and it took Bret Hart wobbling him with the friggin' ring bell to bust him open and then put him in the sharpshooter and not let go. So those type of losses only made Steve Austin more popular, because they were hard-fought losses, and you were like, damn, Steve Austin is the man. And in ways, they're not doing that with Bray Wyatt, which I think is very unfortunate, because his moniker, the New Face of Fear, right now, that really belongs to The Undertaker. And Undertaker's not going to be around that much longer, and once he is gone, you need a new character to take up that Face of Fear persona, and Bray Wyatt is the perfect person to do that, and that's why I feel they should be putting the pedal to the metal as far as his character progression now, instead of just having him, you know, push, 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 and then lose, push, 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 and then lose.
You're listening to the Raw Deal Podcast with Frank D and Atlee Green right here at Gerwick.net.
And let's talk about some random mentions here, guys. Let's talk about Cameron being back on the main roster, possibly reuniting with Naomi and Tamina. Could it be a new team bad? Adley, your thoughts, and then John.
It's possible that it could be a new team battle with Cameron filling in the role that Sasha Banks avoided when she left the group. It's also during the California House Show tour with WWE right now, where Cameron worked a six-woman match, and she was a member of Team Bad. And plus, if you watched Total Divas, which, you know, I have watched a couple of episodes, she did indicate last year that she wanted to go back to NXT in order to train and get better as a wrestler, and that was kind of her storyline at WWE Total Divas, where everybody was like, if you leave the main roster to go to NXT, you might not make it back, but it looks like she's going to make it back, and not only make it back, but be a part of Team Bad.
Well, you know, the team of Naomi, Cameron, and Tamina, As team bad, you know, now that Sasha Banks is on her own, honestly, you know, they're pretty much the female equivalent to League of Nations with that team. So, you know, they'll be heels to job to, basically, you know, which is fine. You know, I mean, it is, you kind of do need those to kind of give balance to the roster, you know, with the superstars and the divas. So I would be fine with Cameron joining Naomi and Tamina for, like, Team Bad 2.0 or Team Bad of Nations, as I'm going to call them. when they were with Brodus Clay as the Funkadactyls, you know, I didn't really think much of them. I didn't really see Brodus Clay as much of a big deal. A lot of people wanted him around. Then they kind of like they had a feud, and you know, I didn't really feel that invested in their characters. You know, I mean, when Naomi and Tamina got together with Sasha, you know, as Team Bad. At first, I was kind of interested in them, but then, you know, they did that whole Unity shtick that didn't really stick well. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter to me if Cameron joins Team Bad. You know, that's just another job squad.
Yeah, you said it right there, man. Another job squad. Me, personally, here's the deal. Cameron being back on the main roster. You know something? Cameron has been botching shit in NXT for the past couple of weeks that I've seen her on the TV. So I don't really know why it is that they have sent her back to the main roster. Her and Eva Marie should probably find something else to do. And that's just my opinion on that. I just don't really see anything in either one of them. Now, if you would have told me that they were going to bring Asuka to the main roster, that's a different story right there. Because Asuka is going to kill everybody up there. But I don't really see anything in Cameron. And I was never a big fan of the Funkadactyls to begin with. I mean, Naomi could go somewhere. Naomi could, you know, be that dominant female if they push her that way. But they're not going to. And speaking of dominant females, let's mention this one right quick. Adley, have you heard the rumors about the possibility of Karma returning to WWE?
I have, but I don't know what they would do with her because she does bring a lot of baggage to any promotion she works for. But then again, WWE may look at it as a situation where, hey, you know, let's clean the slate, water under the bridge from the last time she was there with the whole pregnancy thing. And they really want to bolster their women's division. They may feel that Awesome Kong or Karma might be the way to do it.
Jonathan, your thoughts on that?
You know, I love Awesome Kong. She's an amazing character. They completely dropped the ball with her as Karma. If she does come back, she should work NXT, because honestly, if she goes to the main roster, they're just going to butcher her character again. She would do wonders. I would love to see a feud with Asuka, with her, you know, in NXT, not the main roster. No, they would screw that up badly. I have no faith in them at all. Even better than NXT, honestly, I'd love to see her in Lucha Underground, because one of my favorite things about Lucha Underground is, you know, men and women wrestle each other, you know, not just in tag teams, but one-on-one. And, you know, and that, I thought that was a really, really good step up compared to what WWE and TNA and even NXT are doing. You know, I mean, that's really a step up from NXT. And NXT is arguably one of the best brands out there right now. So I would love to see her either feud with Asuka in NXT if she does come back to WWE, or I would like to see her compete in Lucha Underground, wrestling, you know, men and women. That's my take on Karma. Awesome.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. With the WWE situation, do you really need to have Awesome Kong / Karma in the mix when you have Nia Jax doing her thing in NXT?
Yes. Because the simple fact of the matter is, Awesome Kong is more experienced than Nia Jax. Awesome Kong is a much polished wrestler than Nia Jax is. Nia Jax has potential, but if you have a Karma come in there and go up against Nia Jax, that would do pretty good business if they continue to build Nia Jax. But Karma, you know, when you have Awesome Kong, Karma down there, it adds legitimacy to the women's division, because in my view, ever since Sasha, Charlotte, Becky went to the main roster, the women's division is kind of falling off a little bit. I mean, Bayley is doing all she can down there, and you got Asuka down there. But when you're doing matches with people like Eva Marie and giving Eva Marie title shots, you got some serious problems down there in NXT.
I agree.
And another random mention here, this past Monday night on Raw, the Dudleys turned heel on the Usos. Adley, your thoughts, and then John.
I think it's about time that WWE put a fresh coat of paint on the Dudley boys and turned them heel. And they cut a promo on SmackDown where they told the audience that you're never going to see us use tables again, because that's what the fans love about the Dudley boys, putting people through tables. And now you're not going to see that, which will hopefully get Dudley boys some heat with the audience. And the main reason I like this is because Bully Ray, Bully Bubba Ray Dudley was starting to sound a lot like Bully Ray, which I think at one time during his TNA run with Ace of Eights, I will say that during that year, Bully Ray was possibly the best heel in the business. And I think if this is one step closer to possibly getting that Bully Ray character in WWE, I'm all for it. I know he's a jerk behind the scenes and he's a jerk to fans, but, you know, if the guy can perform in the ring and can perform as a character, you know, I'm all for it.
You know, honestly, this is kind of like an angle I expect TNA to do. Like, oh, you're not going to see us put people through tables anymore. But, you know, strangely, now WWE's doing it because WWE has a serious, particularly the main roster, has a serious lack of creativity going on with them. And, you know, I will give them credit here. This is a pretty creative angle they're doing with the Dudleys, you know, going cold turkey on putting people through tables. You know, it would make, does give them some good heat. You know, I don't know how, if it's going to do any favors for the Usos, because the Usos have either gotten mixed reactions or mundane reactions from the audiences. They've never really been that over as a tag team. Maybe for part of 2014, you know. And also his connection to their cousin Roman Reigns is not really doing them favors as well. They're kind of getting the same kind of reaction. So, you know, I mean, it kind of makes you begs the question, was it the Dudley boys that really needed the heel turn or the Usos that needed the heel turn? I'm fine with the Dudley. I think it's a great idea that the Dudleys are heel again, because I remember when they were heel in 2004 when, you know, they were kind of like failing as heels, you know, being like the goons of Spike, and that didn't really work for them. They kind of like looked like chumps that way. So now they finally get a legit heel run to kind of make up for that. And I like what they're going with so far, and hopefully WWE will not screw it up.
I'm all for the heel turn of the Dudley boys. I think that it was something that needed to be done a long time ago. Like you said, Abby, Bully Ray came out of Bubba Ray Dudley on SmackDown. And I want to see where this goes. I haven't really been into the Dudley boys since they came back. I think that the nostalgia pop wore off of them. But I will say this too, that the Usos are definitely in need of some character change, because I don't really think the fans are digging the Usos as much. I might be wrong about that, but I just don't think that they are. I think that it really kind of showed what the fans thought about the Usos when they were feuding with the New Day. And that the New Day, you know, were the heels, but yet people were cheering them and booing the Usos. I think the Usos are kind of, you know, kind of play down a little bit at this point.
No, Frank D, I definitely agree with you on the Usos thing, because I think when you listen to the audience reaction on SmackDown and Raw, I think the audience is now getting to the point with the Usos where they say, okay, you're cool, we like you, you do some nice stuff, but what else do you have? What else do you got? What else do the Usos bring to the table? And so far, the Usos haven't shown anything else to bring to the table, so I do agree with you, Frank D, that the Usos are in the beginning stages of starting to be a stale act in WWE.
In a lot of ways, the Usos were kind of in the same position the New Day were in prior to them turning heel. You know, they were like, people were saying the New Day were the most boring act in the company, and now they're the best act in the company. They just like completely pulled a 180. You know, now could the Usos do the same thing? Now it's tough. It's a tough call because of their association with Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns. So, you know, I mean, would they turn heel like after like Roman and or Dean turn heel and align themselves with them? I don't know. But, you know, they really do need to kind of like either repackage them or turn them heel, or, you know, make them lose more, which could make them more sympathetic that way. But yeah, they definitely really need a makeover, you know, because that's what happened to the New Day. The New Day just like did whatever they wanted. You know, they're very creative. I mean, granted, the New Day, their momentum's kind of dying a bit, so they really need to kind of, like, really step it up, you know, otherwise they're going to lose the audience. So they really need to step up their game with these tag teams, their single stars. You know, they really need something creative for the Usos. They really need something creative for the New Day going forward. And, you know, just like pretty much what they're doing with the Dudley boys right now.
And let's go to another, you know, random mention here. Kenny Omega wins the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. Adley Green, you predicted that this was going to happen. What's your take on this?
Well, as you just mentioned, Frank D, at New Japan Pro Wrestling's pay-per-view titled New Beginnings earlier this morning, Kenny Omega defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi in the main event to capture the vacant IWGP Intercontinental Championship that was left vacant by Shinsuke Nakamura when he announced his departure of New Japan Pro Wrestling and said that he's heading to WWE and NXT. And it appears with this particular win, with Kenny Omega beating New Japan's biggest star in Hiroshi Tanahashi, this goes to show you that they're clearly having Kenny Omega fill the void left by AJ Styles. And from what I'm reading, including Dave Meltzer, said that it's already a match of the year candidate. It's a must-see match. It's available now for watching on New Japan World, New Japan Pro Wrestling streaming service. And the finish came when Hiroshi Tanahashi missed the High Fly Flow, his version of the Frog Splash, and then Omega came back and used two Bombaye knees to the back of Tanahashi's neck, and then hit the One Winged Angel for the 1-2-3 and became your new IWGP IC champion.
And now we're going to talk about some listener questions here. Atlee, Jonathan, we have a question here from Paul from Roanoke, Virginia. He says, can you name someone who had the look and you thought was going to be a big star but flopped? Start with you first, Atlee, and then you, Jonathan.
Well, Paul, thank you very much for sending in the question once again, and thank you for listening to the Raw Deal here at Gerwick.net. But to answer your question, Paul, the first name that comes to my mind in the last 10 years would be Sean O'Hare. WCW was churning out wrestlers from the power plant, and they had that big natural-born thriller stable in 2000-2001. And Sean O'Hare was a guy that was like 6'6". 270 pounds of solid muscle, he had a good look, he was very athletic, he could do moves that wrestlers his size traditionally can't do, and you just figured once he got the WWE, when WWE purchased WCW, you figured that with some time in Ohio Valley Wrestling and some time with WWE's School of Thought of Training Wrestlers, you just thought Sean O'Hare was going to be one of the biggest stars in the business, but unfortunately, it didn't pan out for a variety of reasons, and then ultimately, Sean O'Hare, unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but yeah, that's a guy that just, just looking at the total package, if you will, you thought that guy had it all, and unfortunately, it just didn't pan out.
Again, another person that passed away several years ago, Andrew Martin, Test. I know he had his beef with, the McMahons. But, when he had his last run in the company in ECW, I actually thought he would have made a great ECW champion. And I know that's not really, a world championship, like a legit world championship, but I would have loved to have seen him have a heel run with that championship, because he definitely had certain qualities about him that, really made him unique. He was a big guy, and he had like, some really unique movesets, that most people his size would be limited to in the ring, kind of like Kevin Nash, but he was able to, have a little more speed and charisma to him. But yeah, it was a shame that he never really got over past, mid-card and tag team, because he definitely, I don't know if he ever been WWE champion, but maybe like I mentioned before, ECW champion, maybe the big gold belt, because, they didn't really, eventually at some point they realized the big gold belt, didn't really matter quite as much as the WWE championship. So, I would have loved to have seen him do that. I remember watching his feud with Edge. That was definitely something that really came to mind. And I really loved him with the Un-American. So yeah, he definitely had the look of the world, world championship material. But just it's a shame that he had personal issues with management, and it sucks that he's gone.
Yeah, Test is one that I feel really got screwed there, because Test really never got his heat back after the whole McMahon-Helmsley storyline. He never got his heat back on Triple H for that deal. And subsequently, he left the company for a while. He came back, and Test was jacked. I mean, he was jacked to the gills. You knew something was going on there. You knew that wasn't all natural. And shortly after that, he was released from the company. But I do agree with you. He could have been ECW champion. Test always had that kind of a Kevin Nash type of deal going on there, especially when he first came into the company as part of the corporation. As it relates to Sean O'Hare, definitely. Sean O'Hare was a guy that I was really getting behind in 2003. But that all came to a head when Roddy Piper was on an HBO special, and Roddy Piper was fired from the company, and they pretty much, lost all interest and faith in Sean O'Hare, and Sean O'Hare was relegated to Velocity. And, he was soon released after that and had some personal issues. And, you know, like you said, he's no longer with us. Both these guys are not with us. But if I could think of a guy that I thought had so much potential and was going to be something, and because of personal matters, it never really, you know, went anywhere. I think about the alpha male Monty Brown or Marcus Corvine in WWE.
That's a good one. Very good pick.
Yeah.
TNA, man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he when I was watching TNA back in the day, the alpha male would hit you with that pounce. Here's a guy that can cut a promo. Here was a guy who was charismatic. He had the look. I mean, here's a guy that could have been WWE champion. But unfortunately, because of personal family problems that he had going on there, he decided to, you know, get away from wrestling altogether. But here's a guy that he could have been a big, big star. He could have been a big deal. And I feel that if that spot, you know, if that never would have happened with him, he would have went on to that. And I think that really what they gave, when that spot was over for Monty Brown, they gave it to Bobby Lashley. And that's just how I see that. We're going to go into our next question here. This is Nelson from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He says, do you know what the beef was about between Kevin Nash and Conan in WCW? Go on you first, Allie. Do you know what the beef was with Kevin Nash and Conan in WCW?
I've heard a few things over the years as it relates to Conan and Kevin Nash's beef in WCW. They actually became pretty good friends during the Wolfpack era, and they're actually even working out together. Kevin Nash did say in an interview years ago that he just felt that, you know, Conan was a guy that didn't really take it seriously, didn't really work out as much, because despite all the things you can say about Kevin Nash, he was a big proponent of keeping your body in shape and going to the gym every day, and he felt Conan didn't do that as much as he should. They started working out together, they built a camaraderie with one another, and eventually they became friends. But one of the rumors I had heard as far as why they had beef was because Kevin Nash had a reputation, whether it's true or false or not, he had a reputation for holding down mid-card talent, and that included most of the luchadors. And, of course, Conan, for the most part, was the booker slash agent slash advocate for all the luchadors because he brought them into WCW, and he brokered a lot of the deals that luchadors such as El Dandy, La Parca, Juventud Guerrera, and others made with Eric Bischoff. And when Conan felt that Nash was holding them down, he was actually one to get in their face because he had a little bit more of a solid spot on the roster than, let's say, a Benoit or a Malenko or Eddie Guerrero, because on top of being a talent himself, he also brokered a lot of the deals that made the Cruiserweight division flourish as much as it did, so he could get away with getting in Kevin Nash's face where others couldn't. But eventually, you know, that kind of faded out and they became friends for a little bit, but I don't know if there was anything specific besides that rumored particular issue.
Yeah, what I've heard about this situation simply is this. Kevin Nash and Conan, as Abby mentioned, were pretty good friends. The real big issue started when Kevin Nash got the book in WCW, and that's where he started having some problems, and Conan did not like the fact that Kevin Nash would, you know, knock the Vanilla Midgets, as he would call them, and that's where Conan had a problem with the whole nickname Vanilla Midgets. When you were talking about Malenko and Benoit and Jericho and Guerrero, he had a huge problem with that. So that's where they had a falling out, and you could tell a lot of the stuff that they were doing on TV at the time in 1999, when they were taking shots back and forth at each other. It all played into that, but from what I understand now, they're pretty cool again. But they just had some issues to work out there where, you know, Conan said he had a lot of shit that he held inside for a number of years, and he finally got to tell Nash what's up, and, you know, Nash was like, okay, and they're back to being, you know, homies, pretty much. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Raw Deal Podcast right here at GoRate.net, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and iTunes. Atlee, go ahead and plug your social media.
Y'all can hit me up on Twitter at Atlee Green, and definitely check out my blog at thegreenscreen.net, and I'll have a new column up at GoRate.net sometime on Wednesday.
And Jonathan, would you like to plug anything on social media?
Well, you know, my typical YouTube Twitter name is ZOMGRuler. You guys want to talk to me about wrestling on Twitter. I also have a Facebook, you can look me up on there. Like I said, you know, I'm pretty easy to find. If you just look for the name ZOMG Ruler, just all one word, you'll find me there. And I want to tell you guys, I've had a great time. This was a lot of fun. I look forward to possibly coming back again in the near future. Atlee, Frank, you guys were amazing. Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you very much for coming on here. And that's exactly the point of bringing on people who necessarily don't have outlet to talk about pro wrestling. You come on here on the Raw Deal Podcast and do so. And by the way, check out youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast today. That's the official YouTube channel of Gerwick.net. Like I said before, tons of interview content up there right now with the likes of Teddy Long, Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, Rob Van Dam, Matt Hardy. The list goes on and on and on. Check it out right now, youtube.com/Gerwick Report Podcast. And if you like what you hear on the Raw Deal Podcast and want to make a financial contribution, you can do so by heading over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick. That's the official merchandise store of Gerwick.net. Get the official Raw Deal Podcast t-shirt, $19.99 plus shipping and handling. We'll get you that shirt, and you can show support to this podcast. So check it out today, ProWrestlingTees.com/Gerwick. And for Abby Green and Jonathan, we will check you next time on the next edition of the Raw Deal Podcast right here at Gerwick.net.